Before Jesus left earth, he gave his disciples a word of warning, a word of admonition. What was that final message that Jesus left with his disciples? Of course, Jesus instructed his disciples in many things before he returned to the Father. But there's one major theme that Jesus really wanted to communicate to his disciples, and that's to prepare yourself for opposition. So that when it comes, you do not get discouraged, you do not cower. Jesus' final words in the upper room before they left for the Garden of Gethsemane: "Behold, an hour is coming and has already come for you to be scattered, each to his own home and to leave me alone, and yet I'm not alone because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken unto you so that in me you might have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation, but take courage, I have overcome the world. In the world you'll have tribulation." And then they went off to the garden, and then Jesus would be arrested on the cross. But notice his final words here: "In the world you will have tribulation." And then earlier in his message, Jesus also said in John 15:18, "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own, but because you're not of this world, but I chose you out of this world, because of this, the world hates you. Remember the words that I say to you. A slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they have kept my words, they will keep yours also." And then John 16, "These things I have spoken to you so that you may be kept from stumbling. They will make you outcast from the synagogue, but an hour is coming for everyone who kills you to think he's offering service to God. These things they will do to you because they have not known the Father or me." So Jesus didn't leave the disciples with a promise that the world is going to be enamored with Christ. Now, of course, we ought not to get an unhealthy martyr victim complex, but nevertheless, let's not be naive. Sometimes we're too trusting. And if we're too trusting and too naive, we're going to be devastated and discouraged when people stab us in the back, when people shun us. And this is why Jesus began with the statement, "These things I've spoken to you, so that you would be kept from stumbling." Because if we're not prepared for opposition, we're going to stumble in our faith thinking that we're doing something wrong. We are in the world where we live amongst people who live in opposition to God. One way to think about this is that we're physically living in Satan's territory. Remember, Satan said to Jesus in the wilderness temptation, "All these kingdoms have been handed over to me." So Satan is described as the god of this world in 2 Corinthians 4:4. So think about, as an analogy or simile, is being an American going over to the old Soviet Union. And let's say you're not only in the Soviet Union, but you also work for the UN-sponsored international radio program, The Voice of America. So not only are you living in the old Soviet Union, your job is to overthrow the ideology of the old Soviet Union. Well, we're in Satan's country, the city of destruction. We work for the kingdom of Christ. We're not the voice of America, but we're the voice of God. Sorry, V, for using Russia as the illustration of the kingdom of Satan. I just got thinking of that. I said, wow, you know, it's an analogy. But I'll tell you, the old Soviet Union, these countries, when the ideology of the kingdom of man becomes atheistic, you get some real problems. You know, occasionally I get some hate mail in regard to my YouTube programs. I know that surprises you, but I do. So what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to give up? Am I supposed to feel unloved? Am I supposed to adjust my programs to avoid offense? No, we're to press on. You know, Peter was actually right in his commitment. Remember what he said? Matthew 26:35, Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." All the disciples said the same thing too. Peter's only problem was he didn't have the power to keep the promise. But his commitment was right. And that kind of commitment needs to be made by every Christian. Well, knowing the opposition of the world and knowing the battle that's before us, it helps us to understand why Paul concludes his teaching in the book of the Ephesians by describing the Christian life as a battle and using the illustration of Roman armor. Paul doesn't conclude the book with an illustration of the Christian life being a walk along a nice path. He doesn't conclude with an illustration of rest or an illustration of prosperity, but he concludes with an illustration of battle. And he concludes that illustration with a word about boldness. Notice that he doesn't ask believers to pray for him that he would find a place to hide. A monastery or an ark. He doesn't say, pray for me so I can get some cover. Or he didn't pray that he would have more subtlety in his message. But he prayed for boldness. I mean, what good is all the armor if the soldier who puts on the armor is a coward? And so not only does a soldier need to be covered in prayer for battle, the soldier needs to be imbued with boldness. And this is Paul's request in Ephesians 6:19. Pray on my behalf that utterance may be given to me to open my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel for which I am an ambassador in chains. And in proclaiming it, I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. So you notice twice in verse 19 and in verse 20, Paul mentions boldness. A prayer not simply to communicate the gospel, but to communicate it in boldness. Now, it would be helpful to know what boldness means, lest we think it means loudness or brashness or just strength. Even the dictionary definition of boldness is a pretty good definition. A willingness to take risks and to act innovatively, confidence and courage. But the word Paul actually uses here in the Greek is a combination of two Greek words, all and speak. All speak. Pray for me that I would speak all. In other words, literally, Paul is saying, pray for me that I do not hold back any words. And that helps us understand boldness a little bit more clearly, what Paul is really saying here. In the Old Testament, we often find the phrase where the prophets spoke all the words of the Lord. The Lord would come and say, speak all of my words to the people. Or Jeremiah spoke all the words of the Lord. Sometimes we miss it, but the emphasis there is that nothing is to be left out of fear. Like in Acts chapter 5, verse 19. During the night, an angel of the Lord opened the gates of the prison, and taking them out, he said, go and stand and speak to the people in the temple the whole message of this life. What is the whole message of this life? That's a great description of the gospel, isn't it? Do you know of any other message that's more important to life? Everything is really about the gospel. The temptation for the Christian is to hold back out of fear. Even hold back out of some sort of deference for the world. I was just hearing someone this week say that the right has been uncomfortable with winning. I thought that was a pretty good statement. We get uncomfortable with winning, but don't be afraid of winning. The enemy is actually supposed to be defeated. Now, sometimes we do have to hold back because of wisdom. I mean, even the proverb says, a fool utters all of his mind, but a wise man holds it back until later. And Jesus said, do not throw your pearls before swine. But make sure that the reason for keeping quiet is not an excuse for cowardice. That you're not letting the ungodly run the conversation. Because as it says in Proverbs 25:26, like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Just reminded me of a friend of mine who said that when he was in school, he had a fight with a person and he beat this guy up, which is not a good thing to do. I'm not advocating that, but he did do that. But the guy went and told all of his friends that he was the one who won. And this fellow said, after a while, he started to actually believe that he lost, and he started being afraid of this other guy. Well, let's remember that Satan is the one who actually lost the battle here, and we're actually the winners. Anyway, Proverbs 8:38. Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be also ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. This is really important. I remember one of my sons, a son that happens to live in Texas, so you know which one that is, said to me a number of years ago when he was working at Foster Wheeler that he got into a conversation with his coworkers about the deviance of homosexual behavior. And all of his coworkers said, you know what, you're absolutely right, and we believe everything you're saying, but we would never say it. And that's why our culture has been taken over by the ungodly. George Orwell wrote, during a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And we are in a time of universal deceit. Micah chapter 7, verse 5, do not trust in a neighbor, do not have confidence in a friend. From her who lies in your bosom, guard your lips, for son treats father contemptuously. Daughter rises up against mother, daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household. Jesus actually quotes this in regard to gospel ministry. It's actually through fear that the kingdom of darkness silences God's people, which is the only power he really has to make us afraid. Kind of gives more meaning to that famous quote from Churchill, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Or was that Roosevelt who said that? Was it Roosevelt? Let's take a vote. How many think it's Roosevelt? Raise your hand. How many think it's Churchill? Raise your hand. Okay, whatever. They probably borrowed it from somebody else. There was a recent example, I mentioned this on the YouTube, about the CEO of Twitter tweeting out about all the discounts he received at Chick-fil-A by using the Square Cash app. And all the political left start berating him for buying from Chick-fil-A because the owner of Chick-fil-A is a Christian and he supports conservative causes. So, of course, the CEO of Twitter apologized and he said he'll never buy from Chick-fil-A again. And that's how the ungodly shut down the opposition and take over society. Now, it only works when the people in society fear the loss of the things of this world and they put the things of this world over principle. Otherwise, something like that would have no effect. But you have to have a citizenship that has lost their principles and their hierarchy of values in order for that kind of intimidation to actually work. It only works when people put money above their values and principles. You know, last week, a particular film director tweeted out a defense of a very popular conservative pundit, saying that this conservative pundit is actually a pretty good guy. He's solid. But then the people on the left start to berate him. So he actually said, you know what, you're right, he's not a good guy, and they threw him under the bus. One commentator made a quote on this. He says, well, the reason this happens is because the world owns you. The ungodly, they run the media, they run Hollywood, they run the education establishment, they run the machine that people need to become famous, have a job, and to become wealthy. And so people kowtow to the ungodly because they want something. And this is the world in every age. You have to decide whether you're going to follow Christ, you're going to follow the world. Remember Moses, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 25? He had to give up his position in Egypt if he was going to follow the Lord. He had to choose to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin or position or wealth, because he considered the reproaches of Christ as greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. He had his values right. And in the early church, we read in Hebrews chapter 10 that it cost these early Christians something to follow Christ. Hebrews 10:32. They endured a great conflict of suffering, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. Have you ever seen that phrase before? By becoming sharers of those who were so treated. In other words, just identifying with the Christian community brought persecution upon you. And then it goes on, verse 34, they accepted joyfully the seizure of their property. This is Revelation chapter 13. You can't buy and sell unless you go along with the agenda of the Antichrist, unless you go along with the spirit of this age. So no wonder Paul asked them to pray for his boldness. If you understand the opposition and the temptation to go along, to get along, you can understand why Paul asked for prayer in this regard. Here's something else. In an article in The Federalist, it quotes a Czech writer, Havel, who is an anti-communist. He describes how the people let the communists take over the culture. Havel writes that a grocer would place in his window, among the onions and the carrots, a sign with the communist slogan, "Workers of the world, unite." He's not actually enthusiastic about the sign's message. It's just one of those things that people in a totalitarian system do, even if they never think about it. They don't even know what it means. He does it because everybody does it. It's what you do to get along in life and to live in harmony with society. And it protects him from the supervisors above and the informants below. These people don't even have to believe the lie, but they must behave as if they do. For by this, the individual confirms the system, fulfills the system, makes the system. They are the system. And when we give way to the devil by keeping silent, By going along with the spirit of this age, we become the spirit of this age. And by appeasement, to avoid persecution, we actually contribute to the evil. And that's what cowardice is all about. Cowardice is not some bumbling, trembling introvert. It's a middle-class family that keeps quiet because they fear losing something from the world. It's those who put something in this world above Christ. I was also listening, I do a lot of reading, listening to lots of stuff. I was listening to an interview with a comedian this week, and he just recently spoke up against Jesse Thorne. Do you know who Jesse Thorne was? I really didn't know him. But he is an NPR host and producer. But Thorne has a 5-year-old son that he's raising transgender. And so this comedian called it for what it is, child abuse. And for that, his publisher canceled his book deal. His management agency dropped him, and he was thrown out of Hollywood. He's now an untouchable. People in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry would say to him privately, "We know you're right, but we wouldn't say anything against it because they fear political correct crowd." So in this interview, this particular comedian made the point, appeasement just means you get eaten last. And then he made this point, there are evildoers and there are evil followers. The majority of people are evil followers. Most people don't make the perverted movies, but they patronize them. Most people don't engage in LGBTQ behavior, but they vote for it. Most people don't steal from their neighbors, but they vote for socialism so the government does it for them. So think about it, when the Antichrist comes, most people aren't going to be doing the work of the Antichrist, are they? But they're going to be following the evil. Revelation 13:3, the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. Revelation 13:8, all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the Lamb's Book of Life. So do you see why being bold for Christ is so important? It's how we truly identify with Christ. And it's how we act as the salt of the earth. What did Jesus say about salt that loses its saltiness? It's good for nothing. And how do we lose our saltiness? By cowering, by being afraid of man. When was the last time you heard a sermon about cowardice? The Bible speaks a lot about it, the cowardice of Abraham, remember? He lied to the Egyptians out of cowardice and he didn't defend his wife. Saul in 1 Samuel 15:24. He says to Samuel, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and I obeyed their voice." Exodus 23:2, you're not to follow a mass or a multitude in doing evil. Elijah became a coward. 1 Kings 19. He was afraid of Jezebel and he arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba. Peter at the fire, he was a coward and he didn't stand up for Jesus. Pilate was a coward. Rather than doing what's right, he determined right and wrong by the opinion of the multitude. And many people in Jesus' day were cowards. John 12:42. "Nevertheless, many even of the rulers believed in Jesus, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him, for fear that they would be put out of the synagogue." John 9:22. "The man who was born blind, his parents, they were afraid of the Jews, because the Jews had already agreed that if anyone confesses him to be the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue." Then you can look at all the people in Scripture who are not cowards. Can you think of any? I mentioned Moses, right? But also remember Daniel, his three friends. Joseph. Stephen. Yeah. Daniel and his three friends, they wouldn't bow down to the idol in society that everyone else was worshiping. So, very quickly, what's at the heart of cowardice? First, unbelief. We're cowards when our hearts are ruled by fear rather than by faith. And secondly, it's idolatry. God is not first. We're putting men and things above God. We're putting our emotions. We're putting our safety. We're putting our feelings before God. Remember the early Christians, they could have saved their lives if they would have just made a sacrifice to Caesar and declared that Caesar was Lord. But they refused to compromise with the idolatry of their culture. And Tertullian, the early church father, wrote that when persecutions arose in the second, third century, whole churches would compromise. They would bribe officials. People aren't as strong as you think they are. But it says in Revelation chapter 12 about the true Christians, they loved their lives even unto death. They did not love their lives even unto death. Another verse here, real quick. Philippians 1:20. According to my earnest expectation and hope that I will not be put to shame in anything, but that with all boldness Christ will even now, as always, be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. So a key virtue we need to add to our Christian life is boldness. Have you ever considered that God might want you to be more bold? Here are some verses. Acts 4:31. And when they had prayed, the place where they had gathered together was shaken, and they were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak the word of God with boldness. Acts 9:27, Paul is speaking boldly in the name of the Lord. Acts 14:3, therefore they spent a long time there speaking boldly with reliance upon the Lord. Acts 19:8, and they entered the synagogues and continued to speak boldly for 3 months. 2 Corinthians 3:12, having such a hope, we use great boldness of speech. 1 Thessalonians 2:2. But after we had already suffered and had been mistreated in Philippi, as you know, we have boldness in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amidst much opposition. You may not have seen all of those scriptures in totality, but the scriptures really do admonish us to boldness. Of course, we still need to speak the truth in love. We still need to be meek and mild like Jesus. Paul said about Jesus in 2 Corinthians 10, I, Paul, myself urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. But Jesus still called the Pharisees snakes and hypocrites. And the lawyers still said that Jesus was insulting them, even though he was meek and mild. Well, moving on in the Ephesians 6 text here. Paul makes sure he explains that it's not boldness just for boldness' sake, but boldness in making known the gospel. And notice that Paul doesn't just call it the gospel, he calls it the mystery of the gospel. And the word mystery might convey the picture of something that's a deep secret, but the Greek word simply means something that's hidden. So a better translation would be to make known the hidden gospel. Now, the gospel, of course, is the good news. It includes all the foundational truths about God and sin and redemption. But this is what's suppressed by the world, or hidden by the world, misunderstood and distorted by the world. So we need to communicate that body of truth. I love this thing that I heard from Andrew Clavin this week. He said, preachers ask all the time, how can we reach the world? And Clavin said, it's really quite simple. Stop preaching the gospel and the world will come rushing to you. I thought that's really well said. That's how you reach the world. Stop preaching the gospel. I was down at the Ocean Grove Boardwalk Pavilion and a man was there sharing his testimony. He was a drug addict. He was a mocker of God. Worked at a hospital and sold drugs on the side to the hospital workers. Illegal drugs, by the way. But there was one man where he worked, who was a Christian, who he mercilessly mocked for 8 years, testing him to see if he could break him. Then one day, this drug dealer's wife started to attend church, so he wanted to know what Christianity was all about, so who did he go to? That Christian at his place of work. And that man was able to lead this drug dealer to Christ. But if that Christian, who put up with that for 8 years, started to appease the world, he would never have had that opportunity to lead that drug dealer to Christ. So do not cower. Philippians 1:28. No way alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, that you're not cowering, because you actually believe in what you're preaching. But of salvation for you, and that too from God, and also Old Testament, Jeremiah 1:17. Gird up your loins and arise, and speak to them all which I command you. Do not be dismayed before them, or I will dismay you before them. When we cower, we're saying to everyone that God's not so important. I think the unsaved really enjoy when Christians compromise, because it soothes their conscience. Because they can just say, they're a hypocrite. They can just simply say that. Then Paul explains a very important concept in this whole issue of a bold outreach, that we are ambassadors. If we see ourselves as ambassadors rather than just regular citizens of this world, it's going to make all the difference in our approach. What's an ambassador? An important representative from another country. And we'll find boldness if we realize that we're citizens of the kingdom of heaven and we're on temporary assignment to this world. 2 Corinthians 5:20, therefore we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. It's God who's speaking through us. So we don't have to adapt to the culture of this world. Our job is to represent the culture of the kingdom of Christ. Think about that. Evangelicals in America, I've emphasized too much adapting to the culture of this world to win this world. But if you adapt to the culture of this world, you only win the culture of this world to the culture of this world. And it's a lousy ambassador who apologizes for his country, is ashamed of his country, and doesn't stand up for his country. Now, it's interesting that Paul doesn't just call himself an ambassador, he calls himself an ambassador in chains because he's in jail in Rome. And that kind of applies to all of us because we're persecuted as believers. Many ambassadors actually came to ancient Rome from various foreign countries, just like we have in New York City. You see all those diplomatic license plates. New York City is just filled with ambassadors. So Paul is an ambassador to Rome, but he's one in chains. One commentator wrote it this way: ambassadors were to be received with all respect due to the ones who sent them. They were immune from hostility, even if they represented an enemy kingdom. Paul was an ambassador of the greatest king in the greatest kingdom. And in fact, he was on a mission of peace. How do we know that? He calls himself an ambassador in verse 20, but what does it say in Ephesians 6:15? Your feet shod with preparation of the gospel of what? Peace. So he's an ambassador on a mission of peace, and yet he's treated as a criminal and thrown in jail just like Christ. And Christ was God's representative. Now, for Paul to be arrested, it may have appeared that Paul was not a very good ambassador or that he was not from a very powerful country. But Paul was actually communicating exactly what God wanted him to communicate, that the empires of men hate God. And actually, we communicate a greater truth to this world by being persecuted than by being praised. So remembering that we're ambassadors from heaven, that'll give us great boldness. So pray that utterance would be given to us, to open our mouths boldly, to make known the mysteries of the gospel. So there's another piece of armor that we need to add here, and that is boldness. Because boldness is a weapon against the enemy. And one final verse here from Isaiah. This is a great verse. Listen to me, you who know righteousness, a people in whose heart is my law. Do not fear the reproach of man, nor be dismayed at their revilings. Isn't that a great verse? That's like a memory verse for the week, right? Let's get the context of that. Lift up your eyes to the sky, then look to the earth beneath, for the sky will vanish like smoke, and the earth will wear out like a garment, and its inhabitants will die in like manner, but my salvation will be forever, and my righteousness will not wane. What's going to happen to this world? It's going up in smoke, right? The people of this world, they toil for fire, as it says in the book of Habakkuk. Then it says, okay, given that fact, listen to me, you who know righteousness, a people in whose heart is my law, do not fear the reproach of men. Right, because they're going to be toast, using the vernacular. Verse 8, for the moth will eat them like a garment, and the grubs will eat them like wool, but my righteousness will be forever, and my salvation to all generations. And it's because of the truth we're bold.